Let's get international, shall we? Today's guest is from the Netherlands and is a queer Catholic activist. This is On a Mission, episode 17. I'm your host, Maureen Dupree-Dominguez. I'm a minister, a teacher, a writer, and a general people enthusiast living in the beautiful Bay Area of California. I can't wait to share some of my favorite people with you. Zinzi Neve Geen is a Dutch queer Catholic activist and facilitator. She lives in Amsterdam, where she has a day job as a digital designer. And on the side, she fosters safe places for queer people to just be. She calls it being a queer facilitator. She's on the board of the emerging organization Vine and Fig, an online space for queer Catholics to find support along their spiritual journeys. We talk about what queer means. We talk about a lot of Catholic stuff, including novenas and uncomfortable pews. And you don't want to miss what she observes about Christianity on Pinterest and the authentic reality of Christianity in our lived human experiences. A trigger warning, there is some talk in this episode about violence done to queer people in the world. So please take care of yourself as you listen. Let's get to it. Listen in. I so appreciate your taking the time to talk to me and my listeners.
Of course.
Thank you for inviting me.
All
right. So for the people who are listening, who are like, Zinzi, what now? Tell my listeners something that they should know about you. A few things they should know about you from the get.
I am Zinzi. Something that a lot of people seem to want to know is how to pronounce my name. It's Zinzi Neve Geen. I work as a designer and a queer facilitator, predominantly with LGBTQIA plus Catholics around the world. And I'm part of the leadership team of Vine and Fig.
So exciting. How did you come to be a worldwide facilitator of queer Catholic spaces?
Well, I mean, as a queer person, I have, like many other queer people, had a long journey, and I am still on the journey of affirming my own gender and sexual identity. And through my travels, I found Vine and Fig, and I was so delighted to see that there are people building a space for, you know, people like me who knew that they wanted to live in their truth and who also couldn't really shake their Catholic heritage. And after a few months of hanging around there, they asked me to join the leadership team. So here we are, catering to, you know, queer people who are out and proud, married for years and years, and also to many people who are still questioning, who are in the closet, who are, I actually don't like to say in the closet, I like to say who haven't invited other people into their queerness yet. And also a lot of people who are, you know, living in homes that don't accept them.
Yeah. It's a really serious thing.
Very, and actually much more serious than I, in Amsterdam thought it still was in 2020.
Talk about Vine and Fig a little bit more specifically. What sorts of offerings do you all have?
So the main thing that everything in Vine and Fig gravitates around is our Slack community. Slack is just an app. It's basically a private online space where we get together and ask questions, share prayer intentions, you know, just tell each other that we're really bummed out about something or that we're really happy about something. And around that community that we've been building for the past 2 years, we facilitate events. They can be kind of unscripted, just hangouts, or novena prayers, or pride events, you know, whatever comes up on the queer calendar during the year. And next to that, we have a blog where we like to, well, mostly share stories. We, I think the two founders had, well, they didn't have, but they saw the value in storytelling as a way of showing how normal queer lives are, how abundant they are. And we still try to honor that by giving people a platform to share really whatever comes up for them in their, you know, specific intersection. Yeah. Most of the pieces that people write will deal specifically with queer Catholicism, like our Sunday Reflection series. But we've also definitely been trying to attract voices who want to share things that oftentimes both in Catholicism and in queerness kind of, you know, fall to the side, such as, you know, the Black Lives Matter movement in the church. That's for some people a delight to see, and for other people something that's really disturbing. And in the queer community, which now I say it like, now that I say it like that, it sounds like a monolith, but it really isn't.
Yeah.
A lot of people in the queer community too struggle with, you know, coming to terms with their own racism. And we want to be a platform that embraces those types of difficult conversations very specifically.
Yes. How lovely to dive right into the heart of it. For those who are listening who are still confused about the term queer, how do you think about the word queer?
That is a good and difficult, but very important question. To me, queer means two things. Queer, of course, came up as a term that was very like politically charged. And over the past, let's say 30, 40, 50 years, it kind of morphed into a label that could be used by people who would say, well, I don't identify as straight, or I don't identify as cisgendered, which means you are, the moment you are born, you are assigned a gender that you still identify with later in life. And I don't know what to call myself specifically, so I'll call myself queer. That to me is like the narrow definition of the word queer. And then there's, of course, the umbrella term, which so many of us have come to use to refer to everybody who falls under LGBTQIA+. And people who like to use that term have different reasons for wanting to do so. And I'll stick to my own preference and explanation of it. I really appreciate, as a non-binary lesbian, the reality that I am not in some separate category that doesn't have anything to do with trans women or with gay men or with asexual people. I understand that we're all kind of in a similar boat. Some of us are, to use what to me is the best movie ever made as a metaphor, some people are the rose on the Titanic and they're like on the upper deck, you know, doing the fancy dining, and others are, you know, shoveling coal and basically, you know, just getting desperately trying to get by. And I think the word queer is very useful to remind myself, but also my queer siblings, that it is our responsibility to take care of each other. I'm not just interested in taking care of fellow lesbians, but I'm maybe even much more interested in taking care of people who are in the margins of my margins. And that's why I like to use the term queer as an umbrella term. That's 98% of the reason why. And then 2% is it's easier to say than LGBTQIA+.
I'm all for practicality. And what a beautiful expression of solidarity, really, your 98% definition. And pointing out that certainly within marginalized communities, there are marginalized within marginalized, even within marginalized individuals living, like you said, intersectional experiences, certain combinations of identifiers that might shove them even further outside whatever vague norm there is for the marginalized.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Thank you so much for saying that. And let's tease the articles that are coming. So where could people go to find out more about this?
Well, you can go to our website, which is vineandfig.co, which stands for collective. And then you can just click the word blog. And we're releasing new essays every other week. Because, you know, all of us people in the leadership team have full-time jobs, and we want to make sure that the articles are very much community sourced. So we have multiple people from our community writing. The article on lesbianism, for example, we've got 4 people writing that, and that's actually, I think, something very interesting, because when we started the series, we first thought, well, cool, the person who came up with this is an excellent writer, and he is very, very, very smart when it comes to queer terminology and queer culture, and specifically in explaining queer culture to a Catholic audience. And we've really had some conversations about what it's like for the queer community if a cisgendered gay white man writes all the articles on labels that, you know, do not belong to him. And of course, everybody in our leadership team was really excited about that idea. But I think it just goes to show that even in kind of like an activist environment, with people who think about like power dynamics in the queer Catholic community on a daily basis, even we sometimes have to zoom out and think to ourselves, hold on, are we not doing what we don't want our, and I'm making air quotes, oppressor to be doing? But long story short, they're on the website, those essays.
Oh, good. I know that a lot of our readers will be eager to read those. And yeah, it is an interesting phenomenon how we're also ingrained in patriarchy, white supremacy, like, so that centering the white male narrative doesn't seem odd to us, no matter how attentive we are. And so sometimes we do have to check ourselves, all of us, and say, wait a minute.
Right.
Isn't this the problem? Manifest right here in our woke marginal community.
Yes.
Totally. On Instagram, you describe yourself as Catholic and guilty about it.
Very much so.
Tell us more.
I live in a country. I live in Amsterdam, the Netherlands, that has, to a certain extent, quite vibrant Catholic community, but it's quite scattered, mostly located in the South. And here, when we think of hardcore Christians, we almost never think of Catholics. And the developments in within the Catholic Church over the past 20, 30 years have left such a mark on how we view the church that it was very obvious to me and acceptable that I grew up in an environment that laughs at the church, that sees only its bad sides. And it's probably because of that, that now that I've found my way back to Catholicism, which took almost 30 years, the only way for me to look at the church is through the critical eyes of the environment that I grew up in. And if I add that to the fact that I am a non-white, non-straight, non-cis person who's in a relationship with a Jew, for me, on a daily basis, I have conversations about what my affiliation with the church means for other people in a negative way.
They take it personally that you're still identifying as Catholic. Is that what I'm hearing you say?
I mean, I wouldn't say take it personally, because to me, taking something personal is a way to devalue a problem. So my partner doesn't take my affiliation with Catholicism personally, but she takes it communally almost, because there are so many points in history that show that the Catholic Church negatively contributed to the lives, livelihood, safety of Jews, that it's almost embarrassing. And
yes.
So every time I go to church, which I love to do, and I haven't been in months, and it's wearing me down. When I go to church and I donate 50 cents to light a candle, my immediate thought is, what child predator am I financially supporting right now? And, you know, those types of questions that I have to ask myself every day are really difficult. But I also know that there is, I mean, it's such a cliche term, but there's a God-shaped hole in me. And the only thing that fills it is being in a Catholic church. So that's the reality that I have to deal with.
Yes, I am with you. The God-shaped hole. Can you put words around what in either Catholic theology or Catholic spiritual practice really helps to fill that hole in you?
That is a very good question. And I also find it difficult to find a quick answer for it, because the reason why I love Catholicism is because of how it felt when I was a child. And of course, when you're a child, it's difficult to name certain things. But what keeps calling me home is very physical. The smells, the sounds, the sound of like quiet heels on the stones, people sitting in the pews being uncomfortable, but you're sitting there anyway. Those kinds of physical things, it's kind of like they, you know, call me home, which is great, because it makes me feel a certain sense of safety, and it kind of prepares my body to enter into conversation with God, which as an adult is something I'm discovering, and it is very difficult for me to kind of find my way there. And for a long time I thought, okay, it's fine that I have a God-shaped hole. Let's Google and find affirming churches and we'll go there. And then I would be there. And as a total Catholic chauvinist, I would think, how can you pray in a building that is this ugly? Right? So to me, what matters apparently most is having those physical boxes checked so that I can do the hard work of figuring out what prayer means for me.
Beautifully said. How has your image of God evolved over the years?
For a long time, God was just, like I think is the case with many of us, a white man with a long beard on a cloud. And then when I first, as an adult, started feeling a spiritual need, God kind of felt like the universe, and that feeling was very, I don't know. It was a very logical image for me. And these days I struggle quite a bit trying to figure out what gender God is. And then I've kind of chosen to use she pronouns because I like that. And I think it's a good way of, you know, dismantling some of the toxic doctrine that I have in my head. And then I find myself needing a very concrete image of God. So for a few months, God looked like Lena Waithe. And we would be on a bench near a river. And for some reason, the scene looked like Handmaid's Tale. And now I'm in a place where God can change during the day or between prayers. So sometimes it's Lena Waithe, and then sometimes it's Maya Rudolph, you know, in The Good Place as the judge.
Yes!
And then I'm seeing more and more prayer moments where I can step away from God having to have a body. Because to me, that, you know, personal personified God is, I mean, everybody has their own way of looking at this, but to me, it's kind of juvenile to need that. So it's, the image is becoming a little more abstract again. And luckily that's, you know, working from time to time.
Again, beautifully said. Oh, I love it. Lena Waithe and Maya Rudolph for the win. Absolutely. I'm just taking a moment to think about where I want to go from here. All right. Well, there's a bunch of stuff I want to ask you about white supremacy. We'll get to that later.
Ooh.
let's talk about then you. So in conversation with this God and doing your day job and then doing this whole robust side gig world of being involved in Vine and Fig, how do you articulate, if you do, sort of what you feel like is your mission? Like, what is God calling you to be about?
I've never been a person to have a concrete mission or have like a 5-year goal, and it makes me feel really guilty and lacking in my skills in adulting. But the longer I live, the more I work, the easier it is to see where I can really shine. And I think that's how I kind of distill my mission, which is I want to make people who are in the margins of the margins, sometimes of the margins, feel like they can have a space to come to and just be. Next to the Vine and Fig work that I do, I run a meetup here in Amsterdam. It's called Queer Salon. It's a very like intimate setting with like 10 to 12 people. And we have, you know, conversations about whatever comes up in life. And that's a space we didn't really have in Amsterdam, because much like, you know, a city like San Francisco, we are totally saturated in, you know, diverse queer entertainment. But what we didn't have was just a place to come and sit without having to focus on whether or not we were dating or looking to date. And I like offering it there. And I like offering it at Vine and Fig too, because most people there in our private community are American. And most of those Americans are still somehow living in a home that will invite them down for supper on Sunday and spend an hour talking about how bad gay marriage is. And those people who are experiencing those conversations on a daily basis, it's weighing on their well-being, and it makes them defensive, and it makes them really apologetic about why it's okay to be gay. And then there's all these books with the clobber passages and somebody saying, see, it was misinterpreted, or it was read wrong. It's really okay to be gay. And I'm thinking, look at the fruit of your queerness. Your life is good when you lean into your truth. That's what it's about. And so my mission is to facilitate spaces that help people kind of get off of that train and just kind of look around and realize that life is kind of okay in queerness.
Oh, yes. And more than okay, like you say, fruitful. And certainly,
yes,
scripture over and over again implores us to look at the fruit, right? And like, what's the result of living? Mm-hmm. Like, yeah. And I mean, I'm not going to be presumptuous because I'm not a part of the queer community, but what's the fruit of living your queerness versus what's the fruit of living in fear, in closedness? Mm-hmm. You said clobber passages. Can you explain? Right. Can you explain?
Sure, yeah. So the clobber passages is what we call those Bible passages that people use to condemn queerness. And I say that because some of them really overtly condemn queerness, and others really don't, depending on what you look at. Like if you look at the New International Version, yes, somewhere in Leviticus, you will find something about how terrible it is for a man to lie with a man the way he would with the woman. But then if you look at the Hebrew text, which I did, because I can read Hebrew, you'll see that it's not about two men, it's about a man and a boy. So, I mean, the irony regarding the Catholic Church is not lost on me, but so clobber passages is what people use to say, see, this is the proof that I need to tell you that you're wrong.
Yeah. Well, and worse, I wanted to ask you about, because the theme of safety seems to come up quite a bit, like as you describe your mission and as you describe a huge need in queer spaces is for safety. And I take that very seriously, because it's not just people use those clobber passages to say, here's why I need to verbally condemn you, which is mm-hmm. psychologically and spiritually bad enough, but also
right.
physical safety. And the violence that it is to sit at a table with your family members mm-hmm. verbally condemning you, and then stepping out into the street and wondering if you are physically safe. I wonder mm-hmm. if you can talk a little bit about, yes, talk about safety and violence with the queer community.
Yes, I certainly can. And I have to immediately add a disclaimer, which is I live in a super progressive country. And, you know, aside from all the shenanigans, compared to other countries, the United States are fairly safe as well. And I know that queer Catholics who are now listening, or even just queer people, are like, what are you even talking about? Because no. But if we look at countries that are not in the West, the reality of safety is extremely different. And at Vine and Fig, we have a few members who are not either from like Europe or the United States or Canada, but not that many, because reaching out, even reaching out to the internet and asking, is it okay to be gay and Catholic, is difficult enough as it is. And I think as a community, Vine and Fig is, what's a good word? Kind of a cushiony place for people who experience a lot of spiritual, psychological abuse in anti-queerness. But we haven't really yet developed, you know, the kind of community setting for people who live in even more dangerous situations.
Thanks for saying that. Yeah.
Does that answer your question properly?
Yeah, absolutely. It's always important for me personally, and I want my listeners to always be considering all the aspects of these conversations that we haven't thought of. And it's so true to point out that physical safety is a different thing in Pakistan than it is mm-hmm. in Canada.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. Yeah. And I think what makes it extra difficult to have conversations about that is, on the one hand, I want to really amplify the voices of people who are saying, hey, I'm living in African country. Why? And it's really dangerous. I need out. Help me to get out of here. I really want to amplify those voices. And then at the same time, every time a person in the West hears of a non-Western country that's being really homophobic, and we should really stop using the word homophobic, because there's nothing phobic about being anti-queer. Just you're being an asshole. You're scared of nothing. But every time we hear something about, you know, an Asian country, an African country being very anti-queer, we pat ourselves on the back, because we think to ourselves, well, people can get married here. People don't get murdered in the street for being a lesbian. You don't get correctively raped as a lesbian here. So that's extra difficult, because, you know, the cake of queer Catholicism and just also of queerness is very layered, because people who are marginalized in some way have, on average, a very difficult time to see how other people who are in their community are marginalized even more.
Yes. Thank you so much for spelling all of that out. That's really valuable to hear and contemplate. So you mentioned that your girlfriend is American and Dutch. So yes. I'm gonna ask you, I'm assuming that means you have a special window into Americans. if you could say something to American Catholics, what would you say?
I don't think I've ever had a question that is more difficult than this. I think I would say this. A long time ago, before Christians appropriated the text of a religious community, the idea that we have to be good to our neighbor was already a thing. That was not invented with Jesus. And as Rabbi Hillel the Elder once said, that which is hateful to you, do not do that to other people. That's the whole law, or Torah, as he said. And the rest really is commentary. So as a queer person, and as a non-white person, and as a European, I would say to American Catholics, it seems like you're really losing what all of this is about.
Yes, thank you. That's so good. All right. As we wrap up, who's inspiring you right now in the Catholic community, in the Catholic queer community? Who's inspiring you right now?
So there's one person at Vine and Fig who I took one look at and I was like, we're going to be friends. You are so cool. I'm not going to say her name. I'm also not going to give specifics about her life. But I'll say she has a really beautiful relationship with novenas. And as I'm trying to find out how I like to pray, novenas have been really helpful for me. So she is definitely a huge inspiration to me in, you know, finding out how I can fit that into my life without losing sense of what Catholicism is about for me. Because, you know, when I think of Christianity, I immediately think of white people on Pinterest, you know, and those white women who make like Bible study plans. Yes. Right?
Yes.
And it's through people like her, but also through many other people that I am learning when it feels real for me and when something resonates with me versus when something looks like the pictures I see on Pinterest.
Oh, that is good. Because there is a difference, right? Yeah. Of like the glossy, beautiful, free printable downloads. Yeah. And the like very polished picture of like a succulent plant and like your Bible is next to it and like, ooh.
That, yeah.
Versus something that actually resonates with your soul.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. And I think outside of Catholicism, I very randomly saw a tweet a few months ago from this Princeton seminary student who said, hey, I'm giving away free pastoral care hours because I need to practice. If you want to chat, I know this is a difficult time. So, you know, send me a message and then we can set something up. And I've been speaking with her on a weekly basis and she is Episcopalian, Presbyterian. Honestly, all those terms are really confusing to me, but she's an amazing, very like, tiny spunky lesbian who's just like in this very center of, you know, the religious community in the United States, I feel. And she's both very well read, but also extremely opinionated about what those texts mean for her life. And the way she's been describing her prayer practice to me has also been very helpful.
Wow, that's awesome. And now, so there are people listening who are like, wait a minute, this queer lady is all into novenas? Like, I think of my grandma, my great grandma, when I think of novenas. Can you explain what a novena is and a little bit about why that way of praying has felt so effective for you?
Sure, yeah. So a novena is usually a 9-day, but you can extend it to however many days, prayer with a certain prayer intention or a petition for something that you want in life. And I don't really use them to ask for things. I feel so about petitioning God for anything. I just like sitting with God and like kind of speaking into existence things that I find difficult because when they're like roaming in my body, they don't always feel real. And I think I like them specifically because they remind me of like my grandma. And within Catholicism, and that's maybe also why it feels like home. And it's the same with Judaism, really. I really love the practice of praying together in separate homes. So sometimes I'll pray the divine office too. I mean, I don't get up for it certainly, but you know, I'll try to pray along. And for a while I did what's called Daf Yomi, which is, I don't know how many years, but it's a long cycle of, studying a page of the Talmud every day. And it's just wild to me to think that there's, I don't know, like some Orthodox Jew on the subway in New York doing the same thing. Or that there's, I don't know, some nun in a monastery who's also praying the same novena. That's just a very beautiful idea to me.
To me too. Oh my gosh. Yeah. Thank you so much for all of your beautiful thoughts and wisdom.
Thank you for having me, Aya. I enjoyed speaking with you.
Thanks for listening to On a Mission. After hearing Zinzi, I'm going to continue to think about praying with a God who doesn't have to have a body, God who could be a feeling, God who could be a notion. I hope you enjoyed my conversation with Zinzi. Be sure to check out the show notes for this episode at www.MarleneDupreeDominguez.com, where you can read more about all of the resources that Zinzi is involved with and has produced. Make sure while you're there that you sign up for my weekly email newsletter, which contains prayer tools, cool stuff to read, and links to other progressive Catholic faith-based stuff around the internet. Remember to head over to Apple Podcasts and leave a review and a rating so that other folks can find this episode. Thanks so much. Until next time, may you find energy and inspiration to live your mission.